Welcome to Cambridge Inside Out.
Judy, Nathan's, we weren't here last week, right?
We were not here last week.
Because it was a holiday.
Okay. Anyway, I'm Robert Winters. Been that my whole life.
Yes, you have. On Broadway in Cambridge, not Somerville.
That's right. Broadway in Cambridge, not Somerville.
If anybody was watching public comment last week.
All right. Actually, my address is 366 Broadway.
We don't have to advertise.
No. Listen, just say my friend Dennis works at the French, I think it's the French Culinary Institute in, he's a teacher, chef. Yeah. In New York City at 366 Broadway in New York City. So I always laugh because we have the same address.
You should go visit him and get some food.
Yeah, he's a great chef, actually. Yeah. So anyway, what's going on around town? We have
it's busy.
Yeah, lots of little things to speak to. Mm-hmm. One thing, maybe we could talk a little bit about some of what happened with last night's City Council.
Right, because there wasn't one last week, which meant there were 19... items on the city manager's agenda, and there was at least 11 policies.
But the big part of the city manager's agenda, item number one, but then I think items 2 through 9 or something like that, were appropriation orders. So the first one was the submission of the budget.
So that's just a formality because they're going to be budget hearings?
Yeah, so the thing is you have hearings based on the budget that is submitted by the... I mean, the city council doesn't develop the budget, the city manager does.
Okay.
It's like at least a half a year process leading up to the submission of the book.
Yeah.
So I always show up at the beginning of the meeting and I wait because the old rule was always you have to wait till all the counselors have their book because if you get it before a counselor, somebody's liable to get resentful.
Oh, so the books were actually there.
Yes, books were there, but you had to go ask for them. So
I
got my fat book.
How big is it?
It's about that thick. You know, it's big fat book this year. I think it's actually bigger than it was in recent years, but I could be wrong on that. But anyway, so that's it. You know, a big, gigantic budget.
And those are available, I think, at the libraries, aren't they?
They will be. I think there's actually some speaking to that specifically.
Okay.
So the operating budget is $678 million and change.
Mm. Nope. What was it last year? Has it gone up?
It went up by about 36.7% over the adjusted budget, which is different. See, so I put together a kind of comparison from year to year to year,
mm-hmm.
and I was thinking, well, why aren't my numbers jibing with Louis DePasquale's number? I mean, he's the city manager,
adjusted.
Right? Right. So the thing is, mine is based on the submitted budget and the approved budget at the end of the budget hearings last year.
Okay, which is different than the opening.
Right. So the thing is, as the year progresses, there may be some people who left their employment and they didn't fill the positions.
Oh, that's a good point. Yeah.
There could have been some supplementals, appropriations that could have happened in the meantime.
Mm-hmm.
So the budget, the actual adjusted budget could go up, it could go down. I think it actually went up a bit.
Mm-hmm.
Consequently, so he says it's a 5.7% increase, whereas I had it as a 6.something% increase, because it all depends on what you're comparing it to.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it's not pocket change. It's pretty serious. There's a pretty sizable increase on a number of things, the school department budget being one of the bigger, a pretty substantial increase. I think maybe it was at 7% or something like that. You know, a lot of other particular high priority items got budgeted, but you know, one of the things that, unless you've been following this for as long as I have,
if
you were like an accountant or something, you might not appreciate
the numbers.
It's tough to actually understand some of the numbers when you first see it.
Oh, tell me.
Because there's the operating budget, there's the public investment budget, and then the capital budget includes the public investment budget plus all those other loan orders, because what the city does in part is it, it just funds certain things, but then what it does is it goes and seeks bonds.
I was going to say, they get bonds for construction and different things, right?
Yes, exactly. So the thing is, so the only thing that would show up in the budget would actually be the interest payments.
Because a bond is kind of a loan, isn't it?
That's right. So the thing is, if you got a gigantic project like the rebuilding of a Tobin school, for example, that's hundreds of millions of dollars, you don't just include that in the budget, the public investment budget.
You put in what the interest on the loan.
You spread it out over, let's say, 20 years, and then you pay the interest. So I think the latest bond issuance they got is about, because...
They have a very good bond rating. Is that what they mean then?
Yes.
Okay,
yeah. So we get about 2.4%
interest rate. Wow, that's lower than...
Which is pretty good. So
homeowners.
Yeah, it enables us to do a lot of things that might otherwise be difficult.
Right.
You know, it's always a decision. I remember John Moot back in the old CCA days used to argue that we should be doing more things pay as you go, as opposed to bonding and indebting yourself.
But then you would never get anything done.
Well, the thing is, it's tough to do big projects.
Right.
So basically, you should only be bonding for the big projects.
True. true.
But we actually bond for some of the smaller projects too. Yeah. So, you know, $3 million here, $2 million there, you know. I don't know, should you be bonding? Honestly, when you have a really favorable rate, it's not such a bad thing to be bonding
for. Also, are you penalized if you pay it off sooner?
You know, it depends on how you do it. But I think if it's a bond, the bond purchasers, they're expecting their income over a period of years. They don't necessarily want it to be dispensed with.
Right.
There are mechanisms, I believe, because I've seen some renegotiations that have happened in the past.
Yeah.
When the city could actually get a favorable deal by, you know, at a lower rate. So they have sometimes done that. But I don't think they'll be doing that because they think they got a good rate now. And I don't think it's going to go down.
Right.
I think if anything, it might start to creep up a little bit. There's a lot more money for housing initiatives in the budget. And there's other budget items that will come in as supplementals a little bit later on for some of the other initiatives like Alana Mounds.
Is universal pre-K in there?
I think that's in there, but the thing is there may be more. And then there are some of the initiatives that they're talking about, but nobody's actually been specific about things about the arts and arts
programming. Yeah, I thought it was the universal pre-K, the arts, affordable housing, and what was the fourth one? There was like four areas that...
Yeah, well, I mean, it's in the manager's message, you know.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I actually, by the way, for anybody who wants... If you don't want to take the big fat book, you can go to the city website and you can get I think it's about a 17 megabyte PDF of the entire budget book, you know, 400 or
without
so
all the 500 detail.
Pages. No, it's got everything.
Oh,
it's
right.
In the
but
book.
They also do make a smaller, like a smaller one. I've seen it.
Yeah.
The
yeah. And actually what I do is I just print out like just the budget, the manager's budget message, you know, and some other particulars. So you can grab sections of it if you want to. So, I mean, it's interesting. I always remember some people who were running for city council, Brian Murphy in particular being one of them. I met for him when he was considering being a city council candidate. And I said, you know, if you really want to understand how the city functions, you should, you know, it can be boring at times, but
you
go to some of the budget hearings.
Budget. Oh, yeah.
Go to look at the budget book. Go to the budget hearings, listen to the back and forth
follow
between city councilors, follow the money.
That's it.
And and you can actually learn a lot about how the city government works just by understanding how the budget works.
Sure.
Here.
And now we have Louis DePasquale, who was the budget director for all those years. Now he's the city manager. So
now city manager, right. So
he knows what he's talking about.
Definitely, definitely. So anyway, that was arguably the biggest item on the on the agenda, but really there's not a whole lot they could do other than say thank you,
and
I'd
wasn't
like
really
to congratulate.
Any public comment about it.
No, you know, honestly, this is going to sound a bit cynical, but the thing is I've been going up to the city council meetings and listening to the budget stuff every year, and honestly, it's a script. You know, the thing is, okay, so-and-so does this, and they read off, blah, blah, blah. They say, thank you. And the manager says, well, you know, if really it weren't for the cooperation of the Cambridge City Council and
okay,
blah,
but
blah,
what
blah,
about
blah,
at
blah.
The actual budget hearings for the different departments?
Right,
is
so the way it works is they split all the city budget. There's basically three hearings.
Okay.
The
They
have the option of a fourth if necessary,
right.
But it's
You're
never
right.
It's,
and these
it's
are all
almost
listed,
never necessary.
By the way, on the city website.
Yes,
and
online
website.
As well. So the first one, I think, is May 1st.
Okay.
And what they basically do is they split all the city departments into two.
Uh-huh.
And they do about approximately half of them on May 1st. And then I think it's either May 8th or 9th is the second round. So then any departments that were not touched on at the first round, they'll do on the second one.
Mm-hmm.
But they're all listed, so you can kind of see in advance. So,
right.
And it's kind of important for the people who work, you know, who are like the department heads. You know, because actually they don't want to just wait around. It used to be they had to kind of wait around
all
day,
to get their,
and it was terrible.
Yeah.
So usually, what they've been doing now, and I think it's a really good practice, is that if there's any city councilor who is planning to pull a budget, as they say, meaning they let it be known in advance.
Sure.
They really want you to do it before the budget hearing meeting. And if nobody's going to pull a budget, they pretty much can say to the people from that department, "You don't have to come. Don't worry. You're not getting pulled." But they could pull one at the beginning of the meeting, the public hearing, the budget hearing, if it's on the list for that day.
Right.
And then what they'll do is they'll say which ones are pulled, And then any of the other ones, they just have the people from the departments introduce their staff and whatever, say, how you doing, see you later, and they pass them all in masse.
So there's quite a few on May 1st starting at 9 a.m. And these are all televised too, by the way, so people can watch.
Yeah, yeah. So there you have some big ones. Actually, we'll take a quick look over here. Mm-hmm. You know, so for the ones on May 1st, you know, the mayor.
So it's all down here.
A lot of these are not going to get pulled. The executive maybe. City council never gets pulled.
Does it go in order like this, up and down, like this?
Basically, yes.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, yeah. So I think they may pull, it actually lists general services, but that's actually no longer its own department. It's now been rolled into finance.
What's reserve?
Reserve is, you know, basically, you know, it's really something from the finance people to basically say how much money is still sitting there that's not part of the budget. But you have to sort of talk about it.
Community development is not there.
No, that'll be on the following.
Because you have fire department, police department.
So pretty much guaranteed the ones that'll be pulled will be things like information technology. We'll talk about why aren't we doing broadband. Sometimes the law department. Public celebrations, because that's the arts council. It's usually pulled, but not necessarily. They did add a position to animal commission, and that's sort of one of those departments they often will ask about, but not necessarily.
So it sounds like if you go on their site, as you get closer to this, some already may have been pulled, because it says they'll be put in bold.
I will put it in bold.
That's
my
you.
Annotation.
Okay.
That's my annotation.
Well, good. Thank you, Robert.
Yeah, yeah. So that people will know.
Go to Robert's site.
Yeah.
Okay. So
I'm pretty certain
that
they'll do fire department, police department, traffic and transportation.
Right.
Basically the ones at the back end. Election commission almost always gets pulled.
Oh, yeah.
All right. So everybody else will be told they can go home and that'd be fine. And then I think it's on May 8th.
No, it's May 7th.
May 7th. Okay. Then they'll do the other departments that weren't pulled. And I can guarantee you they'll pull Public Works.
Maybe cable TV, because I don't know.
They may. Yeah. Community development, guaranteed. Sometimes historical commission, especially if they got something in the works. Human services, almost always.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe some of the others.
MWRA,
right?
Maybe.
Public investment.
Why MWRA? Isn't that a state?
Well, the thing is that there is a financial, we have to make a payment to them. So
I bet
it has
to
be part of the budget.
Because of all the water thing that happened.
That would be part of the water department.
Okay, all right.
That would be pulled, right?
All right.
And then there is one other one, I think it's on the following day in the evening at 6 o'clock. Well, all of these begin at 9 a.m. The one in evening
well,
is the school department.
No, that's a school choice.
School meeting. No, that's different. So on
May
8th, I think in the evening.
You're right. 6 p.m. to discuss the school department budget.
Right, exactly.
Okay.
All right. So anyway, it's coming up here. It's a good time. They do allow you to make public comment at the very beginning of every hearing and at the very end.
Okay.
So, you know, you get two bites of the apple.
I bet the cable TV might be pulled because I think a lot of councillors want all the committee meetings to be televised. Maybe that'll come up.
I don't think they really need to do that as part of the budget hearing because they think they said there's a city council order saying we'd like to do that.
They haven't gotten the report back
yet. So the manager will come back and say, okay, or maybe no, whatever, and that'll be
all
that.
Right.
So, I don't think it affects the budget in any way. It's just
might see that it's 1.7 million.
You know, I think when Marjorie Decker was the chair of the Finance Committee, she was pretty good at enforcing a rule, which is that she only wanted councillors to ask questions that were specific to budget matters.
That's a good point.
And
you
not
can't
just
bring up
operational
issues
matters.
Or operational. That's a good point,
like,
because otherwise
you know,
they'll go on forever.
Right, but councillors just are tempted to do that. So if it's Public Works, they'll say, well, Reardon, we think you should have gray-colored barrels instead of blue-colored barrels.
Well, we did have that meeting today, so I think a lot of that's gotten covered,
right.
You know, in terms of the zero.
Yeah.
But honestly, it's
really pretty rude to some of the people of the departments that they just suddenly get grilled on things that are not specific to the matter at hand, which is the budget.
I think Nadeem Azim did that.
That was, he brutalized people from the
Election
Commission
a
few years ago, and nobody loved that.
Mm.
So, and actually that was quite controversial at the time.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, this is really just about the budget, so they should really stick to business. Now, there were a few other items, major items, fair to say, that were on as part of the agenda last night. One of which was the long-awaited, 25 years in making, submission of the proposal for the petition to establish the Central Square Business Improvement District. So people have talked about it forever. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think I made public comment. I haven't been going up to council meetings much lately, but I did was asked to go up there to speak about this because I was on the Central Square Committee.
The C2, whatever that was.
Well, I was on K2C2, but there was a Central Square Committee that dealt with some of the infrastructure matters in the mid-90s.
And George Metzger spoke.
He was one of the co-chairs of that back then. I was also on this, it was a group called the Central Square Neighborhood Coalition that didn't last too long, but, you know, we fully understood the need for something like a business improvement district. Mm-hmm. Then when the subsequent things like Ken Reeves has always been a big booster for Central Square. So we had the Red Ribbon Commission.
When he was mayor.
Et cetera, et cetera. When he was mayor, the K2C2 process grew subsequent to that. But really, it was, as I said at public comment, it was a little bit like herding cats to get property owners to sign on. And also the threshold was a bit different. They changed the state law to allow, I think, a 60% threshold. And they got 71%. So they would have actually beat pretty much any standard to get
property owners. So when you say property owners, do you mean owners of apartment buildings or businesses or everybody?
Anybody in the district.
And the district encompasses
It's, you know, they have to decide that. And it roughly aligns with the current Central Square Overlay District established in zoning. I did not look too carefully to see whether they budged out the edges a little bit. I think they might have moved it out a little bit. You know,
but it goes back probably one block.
Towards
the library.
Right, but the thing is the Central Square Overlay District does too. So, but I think it's roughly the same as the Central Square Overlay District. I think they extended a bit down closer to MIT.
That would make sense. There's so much new development.
Well, it's not just that. Also, is that this way you capture some of the MIT owned. So you can
And they were
quite honestly, they can pay.
So
the thing is that you know you get more ownership that'll buy into the.
I didn't realize they owned some of those whole blocks that were Flower Bakeries. They own that. I think that whole area.
They owned a lot of them, but some of the properties are done on these like extremely long term leases.
I understand that, but it's still MIT.
And Harvard does the same. Harvard's great. They maintain the option of one day utilizing it for university purposes.
But they recognize the need to have.
But in the meantime, well, for MIT,
for the arcade thing.
Well, I
was going to put in.
But in the case of MIT, there they had this big 2030 plan that basically, you know, they need to upgrade a lot of the infrastructure of the original campus, and it's a very pricey business. So they owned a lot of properties and assets. Then Kendall Square, coming up to Central Square, and they said, these are non-performing assets. If it's just an empty parking lot, it's not doing much for anybody. So they said, let's allow for a 20-year or more land lease so that you can have Novartis or whatever operate there. And then, you know, at the end of that period, MIT could take it back.
So they own that too?
They own the land under some of these properties.
So then they own, really, we went on that little tour last week, remember?
Yeah, MIT is a little bit different than Harvard in that MIT was established back from its very beginning to work hand in hand with industry.
So
the notion that you have MIT owned property, but you have industry uses.
It
makes a lot of sense. So if you're going to invest in property, that's a that's a good marriage actually for MIT.
Maybe less so for Harvard. I like their industrial feel.
No, it's you know and it's
people like to hate on them.
I kind of like that actually. No, I think MIT is a pretty good player in all of this.
I know.
Anybody who's big and has resources,
they hate on them. Like they should have done more of this.
So anyway, some of us spoke on it. I spoke to it. Patrick Barrett did. George Metzger from Central Square Business Association and longtime Central Square advocate. Michael Monesteem absolutely gave the best. But, you know, honestly, and I think everybody acknowledges this, we're not for having Michael Monesteem as sort of the mover shaker to actually
really
bring an idea to reality. Maybe this wouldn't have even happened. So he deserves tremendous credit for this. So now, of course, it's not approved, but I haven't heard a naysay yet.
What happened to, was it on the agenda or was it a policy?
There were three items. There's the petition itself.
Right.
And then there was the calculations that the assessor's office had to do to determine and verify that, in fact, that they had the appropriate percentage of property ownership represented as part of the petitioners. So they did that. So that was one of the communications and reports. And then there was a report from the city manager pretty much saying, you know, welcome, this is great. You know, city staff is committed. The city's going to, you're very much committed to doing this. Mm-hmm. So it was three different, completely separate agenda items. The next step, by the way, is now that it's been accepted, there will be a hearing, I believe, on June 10th as part of the city council meeting, 6:30 p.m. On it. And presumably, by the end of June, the city council will vote, presumably in the affirmative, to establish the business improvement district. Something which, honestly, if you asked me 10 years ago, I said, that'll never happen. It's a great idea, but it's like herding cats. It's never going to happen. So it's going to happen, I'm pretty certain right now. And I think from what I hear, the Central Square Business Association will be the sort of major player in the business improvement district. You have to kind of set yourself up as a nonprofit entity to do this, and they're already saying when they fire the starters pistol on July 1st, and this is established, they're going to be putting on events, they're going to be right in work.
So what does it exactly mean in terms of the property? Do they have to then pay into a fund?
Yes.
How does that work?
That's the reason why you need so much affirmative
buy-in.
Response.
Right. Okay.
And
so then what is their responsibility?
Basically, they kick in money into a fund.
Based on how big they are?
It is related to what percentage, yeah. And I think is that some of that is actually in the bid documents, and I haven't read them.
And who manages the fund?
The nonprofit. So it becomes...
So would it be the Central Square Business Association?
No.
Or do they have to create a new...
They're creating a new entity, but I think many people kind of understand that the Central Square Business Association largely becomes secondary once they establish this.
Yeah, because it seems otherwise you have too many people doing the same thing.
Yeah, so I think they'll have to because...
Hopefully.
You still need an entity.
Executive directors, that would be crazy.
Probably pretty crazy, right? But you still need an entity that will do lobbying for things for Central Square, and maybe the nonprofit can't
play
that role.
Well, they could have a different arm of that, like Planned Parenthood has lobbying and
you
has
create,
a foundation.
But you so you create there's two separate entities.
Okay.
But in terms of the management, which means additional cleanliness.
So what does the city have to do?
Maintenance. The city commits to, it's in principle, the city continues to do all the services they're doing
today.
They
already provide the sweep cleaning or...
So they do all that stuff, right? But the thing is that, the Business Improvement District adds on that. The city doesn't program events, so the bid would do that.
But in terms of being responsible for cleaning up at your curb, I mean, that would be the business. It's encouraging the businesses to take care of their own spaces.
I mean, I would hope that they would do that. But the thing is, if I was a business owner and if I paid a large sum into Business Improvement District, I might have some expectations
that
they could actually do something more of a central hiring of.
So maybe they have
to
hire
some
a
of
private
that.
Person to do.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of this is unknown, but it's not out of the question, for example, in the wintertime.
Right.
Rather than have all the individual businesses shoveling their sidewalks at
you have a subcontractor, it comes out of this
and they
fund.
Actually can do that.
Yeah, that's a good point.
And again, I'm not saying that's what's going to happen, but
that makes sense.
It's the type of thing that
the
can
happen. The
idea
is that you are consolidating your needs. Into
yeah,
this
there was a lot of reassuring that, no, this is not, we're not going to try and chase the, troubled people out
of Central
Square.
Because when New York, that was Nancy Ryan.
I mean, I think when people were first doing this is sort of to clean up the downtown area.
Yeah, that's what they heard.
They might, was sort of the perception, but
there's going to be. I don't know. I mean,
we'll see how it all shakes out.
I wonder what the businesses expect.
Do they expect
enforcement of some kind?
Or? Right, but the Business Improvement District cannot do that.
All
so
right.
That's where you go to the city and you say,
city,
you have a police department, you have social service agencies,
and they do now have this substation that's right.
So the thing is that there are. If I would imagine, actually, there will be greater expectations all around, and this may actually lead to greater expectations of the city to deliver on its part of the services as well.
Yes.
So, but for me, the best outcome would be a little bit more coordination in shaping Central Square in the long view as an actual retail center.
Yes.
Right now it's every property owner for himself, right? And in principle, that's still true. The Business Improvement District can't say, we want you to make this person, this business, your new tenant, whatever. They can't dictate that.
No.
But the thing is, they can help to coordinate it. They can say, what are the missing needs within Central Square?
Well, is there any zoning related to that, or does that get back to the table of uses and all that?
They have no say about zoning. So the thing is that that's still something that you have to kind of go to the city.
So right now there is a table of use for this area.
So if you wanted to do another central square super duper restoration petition, that the business improvement district would have nothing to do with that. It would really be entities. Well, you know, everything kind of shapes itself and reshapes itself over time.
Yeah.
I mean, one of the things I say, and this has to do with housing and everything to me, is that cities have been rebuilding and reshifting themselves around
constantly
for hundreds of years. Right. It's an ongoing process. You know, when Kendall Square kind of reinvented itself, moving away from old style manufacturing to this
tech,
you know, the high tech. You know, it changed
that,
the job base. It changed the people who wanted to live here.
Yep,
these are things, you know, cities change. You know, what I don't like is when people start trying to preserve just for the sake of preservation. You preserve because you want to protect people, but you also have to acknowledge that cities are evolving.
Change is going to happen, right.
You know, and, you know, and in a funny, ironic twist, to me, the evolution I would most like to see in Central Square is sort of a devolution to kind of bring back some of the better aspects of Central Square during its heyday as a real family-centered shopping district.
Hot dogs.
You know, I mean, the thing is, other than that, you know, well, the future is going to be nothing but bars, restaurants, and marijuana
shops.
Well,
you do have the H Mart, and you do have Target, and that is a... I guess better than not having any of that.
Right. So the thing is that to whatever degree you can coordinate and build on that and have things sort of work.
CCTV. I mean, we really...
No, we have a... And I think everybody understands this. We've got a pretty good base to start with. You know, we just want to improve.
But we do have, I mean, that big empty space still on Prospect right across.
There are some
crazy
tenants possible coming.
Oh,
now,
really?
I don't know if the leases
nail
have been signed.
Spotting. I mean, that's been problematic.
There's
where old CCTVs
to I think before a few months are out, those will be fully rented.
I
but
hope so. Well, work bars.
Including one,
too.
I would love to tell you what I know about this.
You can tell me in private.
But something like really nice may be coming on Prospect Street.
Not a tattoo parlor, I hope.
They've got multiple tattoo parlors. This could be something great. By the way, speaking of, I'll say one quick thing on Central Square before we end up here. This Sunday, 11 to 6, is the Mexican Street Food Fair.
Is that going to be
on Prospect Street?
Oh, Prospect.
Yeah, Prospect. So.
Oh,
yeah.
I don't know
about that. Anyway, we'll take a break. I'll see you back in a few seconds.